Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Well, it just sounds like a lot of political theater.
Well, you know, we were talking yesterday about how the deficit is going to spike because of all these bailouts. Peter Morici from the University of Maryland joins us, our economist du jour. Peter, thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
You know, in this discussion of the deficit spiking and that not being so much of a problem, which was part of our discussion yesterday, and stimulus package explicitly endorsed, if not by the numbers, by Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke. I mean, is it the case that certain sorts of economic rules are suspended in a crisis like this?
Well, suppose you have a patient that's dying of a heart attack. You give him a shot of adrenaline to jack him up and maybe save his life. Whereas an athlete wants a shot of adrenaline to perform better in the fourth quarter, you don't give it to him because it's a very bad practice long term. And that's much the way it is with deficit spending. Right now, we have a large enough government deficit. I mean that almost sarcastically. However, given the economy and the state it's in, Democrats would like to bandy this around as a palliative to people to make them feel better. The reality is it gives you a temporary high. If the economy is suffering from a fundamental structural problem, you know, it has a bad diet, giving it that shot of adrenaline doesn't give it a good heart again. It doesn't make it healthy again. And so you get basically a quarter or two sugar high, and then the economy slacks off again.
So what are the long-term consequences then? I mean, we were told yesterday that deficits envisioned by what's already in the pipeline are on the order of $700 billion annual deficits. Would a stimulus package add maybe $200 billion to that, and then we're talking about maybe 5% or more of GDP. What's the consequence of a 5% or more GDP deficit?
Not much right now. First of all, the difference between a short-term stimulus package where you give people some money short-term and a permanent tax cut without some offsetting revenue from another place, where you create a long-term continuing deficit. If you just give people some money right now, you'll push up the economy for a little bit, and then it'll fall back because the economy is suffering from other structural problems. That short-term stimulus won't have much of a negative effect on the economy longer term. One of the things to remember, though, is we need to have a large deficit right now because we have a large trade deficit. The trade deficit is a subtraction from domestic demand for goods and services. Until we cure that, the economy will always slump if the budget deficit goes down.
I see. So we're financing our imports and consumption because of the trade deficit, particularly oil, and we need the deficit to sort of prop up that imbalance of payments.
110% of the deficit is oil, inexpensive consumer goods from China, and a little bit of it is automobiles. Oil in China is about 90 to 95% depending on the month, and cars would bring you up to about 110%. How can that be bigger? Well, because we export some stuff.
And there's one thing. You were talking short term is a sugar high, but what if we're talking about, say, the Barack Obama proposal, and I think McCain has mentioned this in some ambiguous way, of an infrastructure program that over a long period of time provides jobs and some sort of stimulus. Is that the way to go here?
I'm very worried about that. The reason is I don't like the kind of infrastructure program we get. I think it would lower economic efficiency and growth long term. Let me explain why. If we build a lot of roads, that there's the premise that roads are good for America. I think we've already built an adequate number of roads to take people 50 miles from our cities so they commute 100 miles a day. That will likely boost our oil consumption a lot. If we go to esoteric alternative forms of energy instead of the solutions that we know would generate real results within 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, for example, building out hybrid vehicles very rapidly, drilling some more, going to some of the more practical energy alternatives, most of that is not infrastructure. Most of that is incentives to private industry and to individuals to make certain choices. That would be much more productive. It's very easy if you're a Democrat running for president to suggest lots of things that give state and local governments, which tend to be dominated by Democrats right now, money to spend to spread around. State and local governments do not need more money right now.
Peter, to go back to your critically ill patient, isn't the important point here the combination? First, you steady the banking system. Then you get some money into the hands of consumers. That equals some stability towards gaining traction to a healthier economy?
If I can play the internist to the nation, I would say I'd be for a stimulus package if they were doing the right things to steady the economy. But, for example, the bailout package, while it has important positive components, doesn't do the most essential thing, and that's straightening out executive compensation. Capping the five top salaries at a bank means little when the bank has thousands of overpaid employees.
That'd be someone like, say, Vikram Pandit, Citicorp.
I didn't want to say that. Citibank. I was going to say the top five employees at Citibank and Vikram Pandit. I knew you would say something I said that.
It just popped into my head.
I didn't want to do that.
But isn't the heart of this, though, the mortgage crisis? And isn't the question of how to deal with that, given all the resets on people's mortgages that are going to take place through 2010?
It's part of a bigger puzzle. Americans need to save more, but we need to import less, which means we need to consume less oil and we need to do something about our trade deficit with China. If we did that, then we could save more. And we also could have a smaller budget deficit and still have adequate demand for the things that we make. We have to accept that housing prices are likely to go down a little further and then stay at that level and then rise again slowly, because they got out far beyond what people could afford to pay for housing. Housing tracks personal income, and it got out in front of it. And so we have to accept that.
Peter, before we go, I want to go back to something you said a moment ago. You said state and local governments don't need any more money right now.
No.
Giant deficit in California, giant in New York.
Spending spree. They've been like the American consumer. As housing values have gone up, they've reaped in those property taxes and gotten involved in all kinds of projects. I live here in Alexandria, Virginia, and they're building a rec center down the street that looks like a cathedral. I mean, no, my feeling is the state and local governments spend as quickly as they can when times are booming, and then cry bloody murder when the economy slacks back. They need to have cyclical budget balancing, and they need to start to be more prudent in good times, which they haven't been.
Well, we'll talk about what that means.
We can talk about another time.
Yeah, we can talk about the deficits
in
these states.
New York City, of all places, ought to know about government spending a lot of money.
That's true, Professor.
I grew up, by the way, in New York.
I can sort of tell, but I can sort of tell. It's something about the feistiness, the voltage level of the voice.
I was raised in Queens. I was born in Ferraro's district.
I can hear you screaming over the 59th Street Bridge. No. Yelling at road rage with Peter Morici. He's the internist to America. Professor Peter Morici is economist and business professor at the University of Maryland. Thanks, as always.
Take care.